Motherhood has been used to oppress and exploit women for centuries, but it doesn't have to be this way, and as mothers, we're ready for a revolution. We love our kids, but we struggle with losing our identities, bearing the weight of motherhood without enough support, and striving to meet those impossible standards of what it means to be a good mother. It's time to openly discuss how motherhood is deeply affected by patriarchy, racism, and capitalism, so that we can break free of these systems. As mothers, we know our work is valuable and has radical potential to birth a more equitable and inclusive future for ourselves and our children. Welcome to the Rebel Mothers Podcast. I'm your host, Susie Fischleiter, and together we'll explore the challenges of modern motherhood and reclaim mothering as an act of liberation. Hello! So today we are going to talk all about the theory of matricentric feminism, which is a core element to the theme of this podcast. We're going to go over the definition of matricentric feminism, why it's an important contribution to academia, public policy, and motherhood in general. And I'll kind of trace the lineage for you, like, you know, talk about why it's important, give you some of the pioneers, kind of where it came from, and then some of the contemporary scholars of this movement. So let's just dive right in. What is matricentric feminism? But let's actually back up. I meant to start with, what is feminism? Because I think feminist and feminism has connotations to people. And I have very good friends who I know are feminists in their values, but they're like, oh, I'm not a feminist. I don't consider myself a feminist, which I always find really interesting. So let's just talk about this word feminism. Feminism is a socio-cultural, multifaceted movement that aims to examine and rectify the economic, social, and ideological inequalities among individuals based on gender. Basically, feminism is a movement and a theory and an idea that women should be equal to men, meaning in the same opportunities, their attributes should be equally as valued as men's attributes, that kind of thing, okay? So it also kind of aims to reshape perceptions of sex and gender as well. So it's feminism is a dynamic movement, right? And it continually evolves to encompass diverse experiences of different individuals across different societies. So there are already various feminist theories and perspectives that already exist. So you can think of it not just as feminism as like this one movement, but think of it as plural, feminisms. And these feminisms reflect different ideologies and different focuses based on different identities and different lived realities. So for example, we have advocates and scholars of Black feminism, eco-feminism, Marxist feminism, radical feminism, transnational feminism, and more. So all of these sort of feminisms have at their core belief, advocating for women to attain equitable rights and liberties, they have these different lenses through which they apply their theories. So even though there might be different areas of focus, all of them advocate for women and, kind of within patriarchal and capitalist frameworks, they are uplifting and celebrating the contributions and lives of women themselves. It's not just, we want women to be just like men. We want the lives of women to be celebrated. So what is matricentric feminism? It's one of these theories. It's one of these sort of different lenses. And that basically means it's a feminism that is centered on mothers. So the term comes from the book of the same name, Matricentric Feminism, Theory, Activism, and Practice, written by Dr. Andrea O'Reilly in 2016. And I'll get into Andrea a little bit when we talk about kind of the four mothers of this theory. But matricentric feminism, it's a theory that centers the experiences, perspectives, and voices of mothers within the overall feminist movement. It's not meant to replace feminism. It's a feminism that is mother-focused. And let me read from the back of the book because I think this sums it up nicely. Quote, this book argues that the category of mother is distinct from the category of woman, and that many of the problems mothers face, social, economic, political, cultural, psychological, and so forth, are specific to women's role and identity as mothers. Indeed, mothers are oppressed under patriarchy as women and as mothers. Consequently, mothers need a feminism of their own, one that positions mothers' concerns as the starting point for a theory and politic of empowerment. O'Reilly terms this new mode of feminism matricentric feminism. End quote. So I first heard this term a few years ago before I decided to go back to school to pursue my master's. And I remember when I heard it, it was like that full body sensation of reading something that made me feel seen and understood. You know that feeling, right? You read or you hear something that speaks to you so personally and clearly, it's like they created it just for you. At the time, I'd been really struggling with my identity after leaving my career as a workplace consultant to support my husband's career and, you know, to stay home with the kids, our three kids. And I've talked about this on the podcast already, so I won't go into it here, but one of the things I felt like I was letting feminism down. Like I was undoing all the work of previous generations of women by choosing to stay home instead of choosing to pursue a career. And consciously, I knew that wasn't true. I mean, I myself had uttered, you know, that somewhat empty phrase of course a woman should be able to choose whether they work or stay home with kids. But unconsciously, I had a total chip on my shoulder about it. Secretly, it was like, sure, a woman should be able to choose, but obviously she should choose to have a career. That's what women have been fighting for generations, right? And I had always identified as a feminist, and that was really easy to do before I had kids. And, you know, when I was like leaning in at the workplace and I had my own source of income and I'd gotten an education and had this whole empowered woman identity that had me on equal footing with my husband. But then when I left all that and I found myself filling a more quote unquote like traditional gender role, I found myself Googling things like, can I be a feminist if I'm a stay-at-home mom? Is there a feminist motherhood? And then I felt this really weird guilt too, because I really enjoyed spending time with my kids. I loved it. I love being a mom. I liked being able to pick up my three-year-old at noon after preschool instead of having to pay extra for her to be there all day. I like volunteering to be a chaperone for field trips for my older kids. You know, my life, even as a stay-at-home mom, it's not centered around my children, but I love being able to spend more time with them instead of when I was working and it was like this rushed, you know, couple of hours in the evening where we were trying to do bedtime and dinner and bath and the whole thing, right? I love the fact that I don't have to wake up at 5:30 to get myself ready for work before the kids get up. My life, all of our lives and our family are way easier and less stressful. And that started when I stopped working. So I can run errands and do laundry and cook meals during the week, which made our weekends less busy. And all of this obviously is an incredible privilege. And it also felt like a betrayal to feminists. Even though for women who are mothers, mothering is undeniably a significant dimension of their life. In fact, there was a 2020 Pew Research study that found that the vast majority of mothers, 88%, say that being a parent is the most or one of the most important aspects of who they were as a person. So it felt like, why did I feel like I wasn't being a feminist when I was doing something that was so not inherent, but like important to the lives of so many women? So anyway, after all my Googling and checking books out at the library and listening to podcasts, I finally discovered the work of O'Reilly and her motherhood studies world. And it was like, oh, the angels sang to me. This is what I've been looking for. And as O'Reilly writes in the introduction to her book, quote, motherhood, it could be said, is the unfinished business of feminism. A mother-centered feminism is needed because mothers, arguably more so than women in general, remain disempowered despite 40 years of feminism. End quote. Here was someone acknowledging that yes, feminism has left mothers behind. That women over the last 100 years have made significant strides in education, science, politics, employment, writing, so many other areas. But motherhood as an identity doesn't look a heck of a lot different from the last few generations. In fact, it's arguably more difficult to be a mother today. Today's mothers spend more time with their children than mothers did in the 1960s, and we're worrying about them a lot more. Parents today feel more pressure to constantly teach and interact with their children. We're emotionally engaging with our children more. We're giving them more verbal affirmations, more outward displays of affection, having honest conversations about hard topics instead of just being like, do it because I told you so. That's just the way things are, right? Parents also spend more time worrying about their children's mental health. Parents of color worry more about violence. We're all worrying more about the economy and environmental concerns. So yeah, feminism helped women make incredible strides, but for mothers, it seems like our job got harder? Here's another example from the book of the difference between feminism and motherhood. Quote, a review of recent scholarship on mothers and paid employment revealed that although women have made significant gains over the last three decades, mothers have not. In fact, today the pay gap between mothers and non-mothers under 35 is larger than the wage gap between young men and women, end quote. So when you hear about like the gender wage gap where women still earn less than men, it's not actually gender that's like the defining feature, or it's not solely gender that determines that wage gap. It's whether or not a woman is a mother that determines how much less she earns in her career. So it's high time we had a feminism that is mother-centered. But of course, mattress-centric feminism is new and emergent feminism. This term is new, right? It's only been around for just within the last 10 years. It's not something that's been around for hundreds of years. So when we're asked to define it, to say this is mattress-centric feminism, there's still some ambiguity out there. And that's what this podcast is all about, kind of bringing it out into the world even more. So here again is O'Reilly from her book, and this is a long but helpful quote. Quote, below I gesture towards a possible definition by listing what I see as the central and governing principles and aims of mattress-centric feminism. So mattress-centric feminism, this is like a bullet point list, asserts that the topic of mothers, mothering, and motherhood is deserving of serious and sustained scholarly inquiry. Regards mothering as work that is important and valuable to society, but emphasizes that the essential task of mothering is not and should not be the sole responsibility and duty of mothers. Contests, challenges, and counters the patriarchy oppressive institution of motherhood, and seeks to imagine and implement a maternal identity and practice that is empowering to mothers. Seeks to correct the child-centeredness that defines much of the scholarship and activism on motherhood, and seeks to develop research and activism from the experience and the perspective of mothers. Commits to social change and social justice, and regards mothering as a socially engaged enterprise and a site of power, wherein mothers can and do create social change through child-rearing and activism. Understands mothering and motherhood to be culturally determined and variable, and is committed to exploring the diversity of maternal experience across race, class, culture, ethnicity, sexuality, ability, age, and geographical location. And finally, mattress-centric feminism endeavors to establish maternal theory and motherhood studies as autonomous, independent, and legitimate scholarly disciplines. End quote. So there we have it. That's more or less what mattress-centric feminism is in theory. So what about in practice? What does it mean to be a mattress-centric feminist, both as a scholar and as a mother? Well, having a mother-centered lens on things, from policy advocacy to grassroots organizing and, you know, cultural production, helps to serve as a guiding principle in shaping the future of the world to benefit mothers and children. So like in policy, you know, having a mattress-centric feminist lens, that's going to help create legislation and initiatives that support mothers and caregivers. Things like paid family leave, affordable childcare, workplace accommodations for nursing mothers, all of which challenge that entrenched, you know, motherhood penalty in the workforce. Mattress-centric feminists highlight those systematic barriers and discriminations faced specifically by mothers in employment, and we strive to create a more, you know, equitable and inclusive workplace. Also, mattress-centric feminism challenges traditional patriarchal norms by redefining notions of success and fulfillment for women. So this goes back to my unconscious, like, a successful feminist is someone who has a career, right? So instead of measuring success solely through professional achievements or financial status, mattress-centric feminism values the diverse contributions and experiences of women, including a caregiving and nurturing role. And by centering that importance of motherhood and caregiving within the feminist movement, mattress-centric feminists advocate for like a more holistic understanding of women's identities and aspirations. And so this helps bring about a shift towards a society that values and supports, you know, the diverse roles and contributions of women in general. And this brings up something that might be a little sticky for those of us who study and write about motherhood, which is how do we handle the gendered and biological aspects of motherhood, right? Motherhood has been used as an institution to limit women's roles in society, and it's served to undervalue their caregiving and labor as a whole. When I write about uplifting mothers and centering the motherhood experience, I don't want to inadvertently create a limiting role for women by over-idealizing motherhood, and I don't want to be exclusionary and leave out people who are mothering children but don't identify as women. On the other hand, mothering has been undervalued, and it is today a gendered role. So, you know, it's time that we recognize mothering as an empowering activity, one that shapes the future of society, offers personal fulfillment and joy for mothers, while also acknowledging the difficulties that motherhood has brought specifically for women. It's complicated. So here's a quote from the matricentric feminist book that's helpful. Quote, "This book works from one particular assumption. Mothering matters, and it is central to the lives of women who are mothers. In saying this, I am not suggesting that mothering is all that matters, or that it matters the most. Rather, I am suggesting that any understanding of mothers' lives is incomplete without a consideration of how becoming and being a mother shapes a woman's sense of self and how she sees the world." End quote. So this is touching on something that we think about all the time, especially like at the board at IMOS. We talk about this frequently, which is how to handle essentialism when we're writing and talking about motherhood. So biological essentialism is this belief that there are inherent biological traits that define and determine, you know, people's roles and behaviors and capabilities. So in the context of motherhood studies and matricentric feminism, it's really important to acknowledge that there are essentialist assumptions that exist about motherhood, right? These assumptions create a lot of the norms and expectations, beliefs like the idealization of motherhood as the most important thing a woman can do, like the highest biological purpose for women is motherhood. This idea that motherhood is completely natural and inherent and completely instinctual for women, that women are destined to become mothers because biology is destiny. A lot of this is wrapped up in religion, you know, that there is a divine plan for all women to become mothers. So these stereotypes might be very fulfilling to some people, but have also created this limitation sometimes on women's agency in making choices about their own life. It's how we end up with things like public policy that assumes that women will leave their careers when they become mothers, because, like, of course that's what they'll do. That's what their biology says. So anyway, by recognizing and questioning biological essentialism, scholars within the matricentric feminist community can challenge this notion that biology is destiny. And instead, we can advocate for a more nuanced understanding of motherhood that encompasses diverse experiences, identities, and choices. We can advocate for a mothering activity or an activity of raising children and caregiving that is not dependent on gender. And this, in turn, allows for a more inclusive and empowering approach to motherhood, one that celebrates the complexities of the maternal experience while also advocating for social, economic, and political change to support all mothers. Okay. So if you've made it this far in the podcast and you're still interested in learning more about matricentric feminism, now I'm going to go into some of the pioneers of this field and some of the scholars and activists who have furthered this important theory. So there have been many people whose works have laid the foundation for a mother-centered feminism. I'm not going to try and like name them all, but I do want to call out some contributors whose writings really challenged traditional feminist narratives and centered the experiences of mothers. And some of these scholars and activists didn't specifically focus on motherhood, but their work mentions or affects mothers. And the people that I name are people I have found personally to be very influential in my own understanding of motherhood, feminism, the value of women's labor and contributions, etc. So we're going to start with Adrienne Rich, and she was an influential American poet, essayist, and feminist, and she was a prominent voice in the feminist movement of the 20th century. She was born in 1929, and her career spanned several decades, during which she produced a vast body of work that explored the themes of identity, power, and social justice. So her contributions to the feminist discourse included her exploration of motherhood within the context of patriarchal societies. In fact, as Rich wrote in an autobiographical essay in 1982, quote, "The experience of motherhood was eventually to radicalize me," end quote. So in her essays and poetry, Rich really challenged the traditional notions of motherhood, and she advocated for a more complex and inclusive understanding of the maternal experience. She critiqued the ways in which motherhood had been idealized and restricted by social expectations, and she argued for that recognition of the diverse role and struggles faced by mothers. She really shed light on the intersectionality of gender, class, and race, highlighting the ways in which these factors shape the experience of mothering. Her most famous work on the subject is the 1976 book Of Woman Born, Motherhood as Experience and Institution. And this is one of those like aha books for me, right? When I first read it, is easily one of the top 10 books I recommend about this subject. Okay, so she died in 2012. Next up is Sarah Ruddock. Sarah was born in 1935, and she wrote the book Maternal Thinking Toward a Politics of Peace in 1989. So Ruddock is best known for her analysis of the practices of thinking that emerge from the care of children. She argued that mothering is a conscious activity that calls for choices, daily decisions, and a continuing alert reflectiveness. And in Maternal Thinking, Ruddock put forth that mothering involves a unique form of moral and cognitive reasoning characterized by empathy, nurturance, and a commitment to peace building. So her work really challenged, again, the traditional kind of philosophical frameworks that had marginalized the significance of motherhood, and she advocated for its recognition as a vital ethical and political practice. So her contribution to this matricentric feminist movement has been quoted as this: along with Adrian Rich, Ruddock was perhaps the most important philosophical thinker to address the issue of mothering and motherhood since second wave feminism. And Ruddock died in 2011. So now we have bell hooks. Bell hooks is another important figure in this development, although this wasn't the main focus of her works, of her writing. So bell hooks was born Gloria Jean Watkins in 1952, and she was, of course, a renowned feminist theorist, cultural critic, an author whose work profoundly influenced feminist discourse, including discourse on race and class and some discussions of motherhood. So she explored all of it, all of these power dynamics, and really challenged the dominant paradigms, and spent her career advocating for social justice. So in her writings on motherhood, such as All About Love, New Visions, and in the book Feminist Theory from Margin to Center, Hooks really dives into these complexities of mothering within patriarchal and capitalist systems. She critiqued that kind of traditional expectation that motherhood was inherently nurturing and selfless, and argued that such ideals often mask the systematic inequalities and injustices faced by marginalized mothers, particularly Black women. In her writings, Hooks explored how mothering is influenced by broader social structures, including racism, capitalism, and patriarchy. She highlighted the importance of centering the experiences and voices of marginalized mothers, whose struggles and resilience were often overlooked when we talked about motherhood in the mainstream, right? Additionally, she also emphasized the need for a collective approach to parenting and caregiving, really challenging the idea that these responsibilities should solely fall on mothers. She was advocating for more of like a community-based model of support and care that kind of prioritized mutual aid and solidarity. And she died only a few years ago in December of 2021. So next up, I want to talk about Rhianne Eisler. You've heard me mention her work before. Her book, The Chalice and the Blade, Our History, Our Future, is another one of those incredibly influential books in my life. So Rhianne Eisler is a visionary social scientist. She's an author, she's an activist, and she is renowned for her groundbreaking work on the concepts of dominator and partnership societies, and then also the implications of these frameworks for women, mothers, and families. Isla was born in 1931. She's still alive. In fact, I was recently at a dissertation defense where she was on the committee, and she is still super sharp. So her book, The Chalice and the Blade, introduced the idea that human societies can be categorized into two primary models: dominator, which is characterized by hierarchies, violence, and oppression, and partnership, characterized by equality, cooperation, and mutual respect. So in some of her following books, like The Power of Partnership and Sacred Pleasure, Isler explores how these models impact women's roles and experiences, often in relation to motherhood. She argues that a dominator society perpetuates a rigid gender hierarchy that devalues caregiving and maternal labor, while partnership societies offer greater opportunities for women's empowerment and flourishing. So her insights have, you know, really profound implications for thinking about motherhood in this way, within that framework of like equality and partnership, and advocate for policies and practices that support mothers and family and children within, as we move towards a more partnership-oriented community. So next up, Sylvia Federici. I discovered her work a few years ago when I read the essay Wages for Housework online, and I was immediately like, what? Who is this person? So Sylvia Federici was born in 1942. She's still living. She's still writing. She's an Italian scholar, activist, and feminist theorist, and she is known for her pioneering work on the issue of women's unpaid labor in the home and what that means for, you know, social, economic, and gender justice overall. So her most influential book for me was Caliban and the Witch, Women, the Body, and Primitive Accumulation. And this book examines the historical roots of capitalism, like how capitalism developed simultaneously and kind of dependent on the role of women's unpaid reproductive labor in the development of these capitalist economies, kind of how the control of women's bodies goes hand in hand with the development of capitalism. So in her analysis, Federici highlights how women's reproductive labor, remember we've talked about reproductive, productive labor as a Marxist concept before, reproductive labor is this idea, it's all the caregiving, domestic work, and child rearing. And women typically are the ones who, you know, perform this labor, and it has been systematically devalued and exploited within both capitalist and patriarchal systems. So she argues that recognizing and elevating the significance of this unpaid labor is essential for challenging gender inequality, economic exploitation, and social injustice. So that's kind of her focus, is the women's unpaid labor in the home. And finally, we come to Dr. Andrea O'Reilly, the person who came up with the term mattress-centric feminist. She's widely recognized for, you know, her contributions to this field and really even just developing the field of motherhood studies. She coined that phrase as well. So, you know, this idea that there should be an academic and professional understanding of motherhood. She was the founder of the Motherhood Initiative for Research and Community Involvement, MRCRI. And yeah, she's been really instrumental in elevating the voices and experiences of mothers within feminist discourse. So through her writings, she's been the one who articulated this concept of mattress-centric feminism, and her work specifically challenges those traditional patriarchal narratives surrounding motherhood, and also, you know, positions mothering as an empowering experience while motherhood itself is an institution. That concept was introduced by Adrienne Rich, and Andrea O'Reilly has just kind of continued with that. Okay, so that's it, I think. So these women are just some of the women who, and scholars and activists who have profoundly influenced me personally, and they've made really important contributions to the idea of mattress-centric feminism, gender equality, valuing women's labors and the labor of motherhood, and just motherhood studies overall. Okay, so let's start to wrap this up. So in conclusion, this episode explored mattress-centric feminism's definition, significance, and application in various contexts. And, you know, it's important to remember that it's an important contribution to feminism because it centers the experiences of mothers within the feminist movement. you know, matricentric feminism offers this new framework for understanding and addressing the complexities of being a woman, being a mother in contemporary society, and can help advocate for policies that support mothers and caregivers. So through the pioneering work of many scholars and activists, matricentric feminism has reshaped academic theory and influenced the practice of mothering, paving the way for a more inclusive and equitable future and advocating for the rights, recognition, and empowerment of mothers in all aspects of society. Stay tuned for more empowering stories and insightful discussions in future episodes of Rebel Mothers. Remember to subscribe, rate, and share this podcast to spread the message far and wide. Learn more at susiefishleader.com, and thank you for being part of the motherhood revolution.